Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
And welcome. I hope that you are having an amazing day. And thank you for joining me on today's edition of the Legacy and Faith Show. Whether you have intentionally tuned in, thank you for your faithful following. Or whether you have accidentally stumbled across this show, Legacy and Faith, what's it about? Well, we talk about financial issues. We talk about estate planning. And we talk about what does all of that mean in relationship to following after the heartbeat of God. And so today, I have a special guest with me. As a matter of fact, he was with me last week as well. So you can head back to legacyandfaith.com and listen to last week's podcast. As I introduced Brian Evans, we had a wonderful discussion, and Brian is back with me today. So, Brian, thank you again for joining me on another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show.
You bet. Glad to be here.
Well, last week we did a lot of introduction. We talked about what you do as a CPA and financial advisor. You have a very unique skill set because you've combined those two things. In case someone missed last week's show, give just a brief introduction again of what your background is as far as a CPA, and how did that move you into actually becoming a financial advisor, and why?
Yeah, so I've been a CPA for about 35 years now and own Bauer Evans CPA firm in Everett and Bellevue, Washington. And we've got about 20 people in the CPA firm, but CPAs basically look backwards, and they don't get to do a lot of planning for the future unless they're licensed as investment advisors. So over 20 years ago, I started Madrona Financial Services, and now we manage well over $500 million for clients and have about a dozen, 15 people in that side of the business.
Great. And where can people find you? Just let's go ahead and throw that out here at the beginning of the show, and we'll mention it a couple different times as well.
Yeah, the easiest way is madronafinancial.com, M-A-D-R-O-N-A, financial.com. Lots of stuff on there. My previous radio shows that I host on my own channels, and then some books you can download, articles, you can sign up for a free financial plan, lots of resources on that site.
Yeah, I was looking at your website, and there's quite a few different podcasts that are available. So you've been doing radio for just a day or two, haven't you?
Yeah, just a couple days. We've done 400 hours of shows over the last 8 years, and I have recorded over 1,000 different daily features. So yeah, just a little bit more than a few
just
days.
Just one or two, yeah exactly. Yeah. So yeah. A wealth of opportunity at your website. Well, let's change today's discussion here. I want to get into a couple of topics that I think people have a lot of interest in and actually may struggle quite a bit with. And so you and I, because of our mutual tax backgrounds. I'm not a CPA. I have a master's in taxation for estate planning purposes, not because of I do what you do. I stay in my lane. So we have a little bit of a different perspective, but yet a lot of alignment in our perspective. And really what I want to talk about is a lot of people own real estate. And actually in the many years here, specifically in the Pacific Northwest, real estate has appreciated like nobody's business. I go to Redfin and I look at home prices compared to what they were 5 years ago, and it's breathtaking. It's really almost ridiculous is what it is. And so now it used to be that people worked very hard to develop a 401k, to build pensions, and that was their security, and hopefully get their house paid off. But their house was never really considered a bulk of their wealth. And that has actually over the past years changed. So if people are set up owning a home, what does that mean for them as far as this is a large part of your wealth? A lot of people can't get at that wealth because it's paid off, but yet it's a stagnant piece of their wealth. And there may be a lot of consequences, specifically tax consequences, if indeed they were in a position to where they wanted to think about, well, this house is too big. We raised our kids in it. Now it's too big. And so now I want to start selling it at the height of the market. But there may be some surprises coming down the pike that people do not realize when they want to sell their primary home.
Yeah, we can break this down into your primary home, and then we'll talk in a second about investment real estate as opposed to that. But your primary home, instead of, you know, here we can have a $500,000 exemption from tax if you're married and you sell your primary home. Now, let's say that you decide to downsize, but you want to keep it as a rental. So you keep it as a rental for 3 years and a day, and you ask me, well, can I take my, I can get my $500,000, right? And I said, no. A week ago, you could,
yep.
But now that's gone. You're going to pay tax on an additional $500,000. Was it really worth it to rent it out for those 3 years? Probably not. So that's one of the considerations. One of the mistakes I see often is people think that they're going to keep their house as a rental for a period of time and then sell it, but they may be sacrificing the $500,000 exclusion.
Yeah, they just turned their primary residential home into a rental property in totality with that storyline, so they missed out on a tax opportunity. But even, you know, I have a lot of clients now that are coming in, and I ask for what their basis is in their home, whether they're single or whether they're married. And so if you're a single individual, you get $250,000 as an exemption. Married couples, you each get $250,000, so that means $250,000 plus $250,000 is $500,000. Hey, that was pretty good math for an
That's
attorney right there. You know, I didn't, you can verify, I didn't even use my phone for that. But what does it mean if somebody bought a home at $250,000? Let's say that they're married. So they bought a home when it was $250,000 in the 90s. And now they live in a highly appreciated home, and now it's worth $1 million. And now they don't want to turn it into a rental. They actually say this is a great time to actually sell the home, downsize, or our kids have moved away, whatever the reason is. Is there something that people should be aware about if they are going to sell their home?
Yeah, everybody listening just says, are you going to pay tax on $250,000, right? And I'm going to say, well, no, because you sold it for $1 million. Let's say you have 10% selling costs. Your net sales price is $900,000. That's the number we use. On the other side, you said they paid $250,000, but they did an addition a few years ago of $150,000. So their cost base is actually $400,000. So you got $900,000 minus $400,000. We have no tax.
So that's fantastic if we can actually trace things and demonstrate receipts of the remodels or demonstrate the additions and things of that nature. What my experience is, maybe yours is different, I don't know, but if I ask for receipts, it becomes really difficult for people to find that. As a matter of fact, even where a situation where I'm at right now is I had a similar situation where a farmer purchased a farm, and it was for, you know, X many dollars. He sold it, and then he recently just passed away. So there was a very short gap between the sell and him passing away. Of course, with farmers, their big deal is they have to make sure their farm gets to the right people. Yeah. And that's a very, very high value. So he made the right election, but now he knew where his receipts were. He knows where everything was. So now proving how much he paid to build the home that was never there because he bought it as raw land. So now we're left with an estate of trying to find receipts, which, by the way, we can't.
Yeah.
What happens now in that circumstance? So he sold it so he elicited more than $250,000 because he was single. What's happening now? So we can't prove that we made those additions. We can't prove it to the IRS that. So now we're really left with something that is over the exemption amount. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm going to say go ahead and we're going to do a good estimate of what was paid. And even though we don't have receipts, I've been in a situation where there's an audit and they said, well, you don't have receipts. We're denying it. And I'm like, well, see this building here that didn't used to be here and is here now? Do you think it was zero? Well, no, but you don't have receipts. Well, can I talk to your supervisor? Because clearly they paid X amount and we think it's reasonable to say they paid $100,000 at the time, X, Y, and Y. And you document something to that effect where it's a reasonable estimate. That's allowed. And you may not have the first allowance on the first auditor if you're audited at all, which you probably won't be because, you know, the audit rates are very, very low.
Very low right now, especially on estates.
Yeah. And so and that may be the case. But I would go to bat on that one for a client if that were the case, they were trying to deny all costs, and you're going, well, no, I can I can see this building. And it certainly wasn't free.
So, and even after all that, if there is still money that exceeds the purchase price, the building price, and the exemption, what's the result? So, in other words, if there was truly for a married couple, for example, we have that $500,000 exemption, which means the first $500,000 of appreciation in the property is exempt from being taxed. What happens after that?
Well, that's really easy to answer because capital gains are taxed at 0%, maybe 10, maybe 20 or 15. Maybe 23.8. It really depends on so many different things.
Yeah.
The rest of your tax return. And so that's a great question. You know, one of the things, as you mentioned, I was thinking that a lot of people think that when they inherit a house that, I got to pay all this tax when I sell it. And there's this thing called the step up in basis that says, no, you do not have to pay the tax on that.
Yeah. So in what Brian is talking about is that when somebody passes away, on the date of death, we look at what the value of the home was on that date. And we say it was worth blank many dollars. And most estates are going to sell a home. There are occasions where someone is going to buy it from the estate or purchase their siblings out. Maybe they'll take the house in less cash. So, but whatever that situation is, the individual who either keeps the home or if the home is sold, the basis of the home, where the tax structure starts, is from the value of the house when the person passed away. And so it's an adjustment of tax basis. And therefore, when someone passes away, it's an opportunity to sell something, whether it's investment funds, whether it's a home, whether it's a business. All of these things, all the basis get readjusted. And the tax consequence may be very, very little, if anything, at that moment. So what happens than with an investment property? So how does that change in the taxing structure? And just give us a little bit of a preview, as we're going to head up against a break here pretty quick, but we'll come back to it after break. So give us a preview. What's the difference between owning a primary home versus an investment property?
Yeah, investment property doesn't get any exclusions like that, but they have other things you can do, something we'll talk about, Section 1031 exchanges, defer or potentially eliminate income tax from all of the gains, capital gains, from your investment in real estate.
Interesting. Well, let's take a peek at that, because I have a funny feeling that that some tax issues on real estate and business owners, because we want to include them a little bit, there's a lot of things that they work hand in hand with finding tax solutions. So if you have real estate issues, if you have small business issues, stay tuned after break here. Brian, if people want to find you, find out more information about you, where do they get that?
MadronaFinancial.com is probably the best place.
Fantastic. And you can find more information about what I do at LegacyAndFaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us. So head over to LegacyAndFaith.com as well. We'll be right back after this short break with the Legacy and Faith Show.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswordtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswordtelling.com. Bowerfilm.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
And I'm here with Brian Evans from Adrona Financial. And Brian, we've been talking about some real estate issues, and you talked about 1031 exchanges and other opportunities that people may have as far as if they have investment in real estate, but maybe they want to get out of it right now. What are some ways that people can begin to unwind getting out of real estate? Because, you know, it's not the easiest thing to be a landlord. And so it's not for everybody. It could be a great wealth builder for some people, but boy, it can get tiring sometimes. So what if somebody wants to get out? What are some things that they can be thinking about?
Yeah, you can go online actually and type in, I'm a landlord, can I ever truly retire? And you'll pull up my Kiplinger article that I wrote and was published millions of times online or downloaded that much. And it talks about this because one of the biggest drivers of wealth, especially for people in the Pacific Northwest, is their real estate, their investment real estate.
That's right.
And so one common theme is that all of our real estate is getting older as time passes. And I'll do the math for you on this one. So are we.
Oh, yeah.
And so sometimes you could be a great landlord at age 35 and not so great at age 85.
Yeah.
Okay. Or your spouse who didn't manage it has to take that on when you pass away.
And you have a child and you have children, but none of them want to be in the landlord business because they watched you go through all the pain and agony of maintaining this place. And so yeah, there may be no one behind you who has the same passion and skill set as you do.
Absolutely. It's a business. And so we talked about wealth on a previous show, and we have this increase in wealth from your investment real estate, but one of the drivers of wealth is having free time to do the things you want to do. And real estate provided what it was supposed to do during your lifetime: appreciation and cash flow. But at some point, you get to a point in maybe your 60s, 70s, especially your 80s, where you go, I don't need more growth. I don't need more value on my statement. What I need is to have more time and less stress. And I'm worried about the stress that this has caused on my family members. So one of the things we can do is something called a Section 1031 exchange, and you can sell your real estate and buy other investment real estate. The problem with that has been, well, I'm just selling one problem by another problem. I've never heard of anything other than that. Well, what very few people know about is something called the Delaware Statutory Trust, which is an IRS reg 2004-86. I even remember the name that allows you to do it.
Now you're just showing off.
I am just showing off now. But I put a lot of work into this.
In fact, I know. I've done, so you should probably show it off a little bit.
Yeah,
this is good.
I think I've done $150 million of DST exchanges now. And so this allows people to sell their investment real estate, use the proceeds hiring a qualified intermediary, use the proceeds to buy passive real estate, meaning they'll never get a phone call. Someone else is managing it. They get their rental income. They get their share of appreciation. And then when either them or their spouse passes away in Washington State, I'll show off again, one of 9 community property states, we get the double step up in basis, and there will be no income tax paid on any of the gains of that property from day one of when you purchased it. So this is the great exit strategy, retirement strategy for landlords.
Yeah, it really is an amazing thing, because you mentioned 3 big deals there. And let me kind of recap them, which is, number one, income can continue, because that's one of the things. If we just simply sold a investment real estate property, number one, there may be a unreasonable amount of capital gains that people are facing, and they'll be jacked up to that 23.8% in a hurry when you sell a highly appreciated piece of property. And so one option, though, is that you could sell a piece of property, and you could make an elective choice to pay 25% of that and lose 25% of your appreciation, correct? So you could make that elective choice. And then you have cash, and you could reinvest it and do whatever you want. like get a really good estate plan. But that changes because 75% of what you're getting may not produce the same income that you're used to versus the 100% using the whole thing. And so you may have to take an income hit, or you may not get much income at all if it's reinvested into different avenues. So by doing a DST, there's actually an income continuation opportunity that most people don't know about. So that's a very strong play. The other issue that resonates is that we don't have to now do depreciation recapture. So not only do you lose the capital gains, but there's a thing called depreciation recapture, which can sting the selling of an appreciated property as well. Because during your ownership, you've been taking depreciation, correct? And that has to be repaid in the year of a sale. So there's actually things that people are not too aware of if they sell an investment property that may actually come back and bite them also. And then the last part that speaks to my heart, so thank you for mentioning that, which as an estate planner, you get that step up in basis, which we talked about at the front part of the show. And so all three of those things are playing together. You get to hold the fullness of your appreciated property, the wealth of it. You get the income. And now when you pass away, you can actually get that step up in basis. Talk a little bit more because, you know, I do estate planning. So talk a little bit more. How does a DST specifically work? Is that something that people buy into shares and they can get out at any time? Is that a contract-based thing to where they need to stay into a contract for a period of years? Tell us just a little bit about the engine underneath that you would be talking with clients concerning it.
Yeah, certainly every investment has negative attributes. The negative attributes to DST is they aren't fully liquid.
Okay.
There is no secondary market. That investment's going to be held 5 to 10 years typically. No more than 10.
So is it a contract-based opportunity then? So in other words, if you purchase into a DST, you're entering into a contract that says the individuals who manage this then have the opportunity to hold this piece of property for a period of time and use your money for a period of time until they determine it's in everyone's best interest as a conglomeration to get out of the property.
Yeah, you're pretty close there because you are buying with, let's say, 100 different people are buying into that okay. DST. And what is a DST? Is something in Delaware? No, it's not something in Delaware. So if I have somebody that sells a property, let's say they netted $900,000, we might put $300,000 into a 300-unit apartment building in Florida and $300,000 into a multi-state self-storage and $300,000 into 10 different Kroger grocery stores or whatever it is,
okay.
net lease properties. So now you're a fractional owner in all of those properties along with lots and lots of other 1031 exchanging investors, and the property is managed by who we call the sponsor. The sponsor went out and found the property, bought the property, arranged any financing, got it leased up, put a DST wrapper around it, and then said, okay, Brian, this is available. We got $50 million of equity. We'd like to get out from your investors. And so investors, you can't buy one on your own. You do have to go through an investment advisor. But then they'll get their $50 million from investors, and then they'll close it to new investors. They'll manage that property, and they'll figure out the best time to sell it, at which time most of my clients will just do another DST unless somebody's passed away and they got to step up.
And not only that, but at each contract end, when this comes to actually harvest the full amount of the money, a client could maybe say, "Hey, Brian, why don't you give me $100,000 and let me take a little bit off of that and unwind a little bit of the money. I'm willing to take a tax hit this year, but not on the whole thing. I want to take a little bit. Is that a possibility?"
Absolutely. They might have let's say they sold a stock at a loss and they say, well, I lost $100,000 on that stock. If I pull $100,000, out of the next exchange, I'll be taxed on that, but I can offset that against the loss. And so, yeah, or I just need the money and I'm willing to pay maybe at the 15% bracket.
Right.
And, I want $100,000. Well, then take $120,000 and, you know, basically, and pay some tax, you'll have about $100,000. And so that's okay to do.
Yeah. And again, this kind of comes to the unique view that you have, which is as a CPA, these are things that you see very naturally, which is, mm-hmm. yeah, you want a little bit of your cash out of this investment. We anticipate that this contract in the DST is going to end very soon. So let's start making a strategy around that and how we can then interplay between other investments that they may have in a portfolio versus what this contract is going to come due versus what their cash needs are versus their lifestyle needs. So every time that one of these DST come to an ending point, it gives an opportunity to really look at and the holistic approach of their finances and say, okay, now might be the time. And so a very unique viewpoint, again, of being a CPA plus a financial advisor and really being able to speak into multiple areas of people's life. Anything else? We only have a couple minutes here, but is there any other tool or any other thought concerning real estate if people wanted to get out of it?
Yeah, you know, often people are selling their businesses, and businesses don't qualify for 1031 exchange, okay. but often their business has real estate associated with it.
Yes.
So there's a bifurcation on the sales price between the two, and you might have different strategies for one versus the other, and the interplay of that can be really important.
Yeah, and a lot of business owners don't have strong exit strategies. That's something that Brian and I would sit down and can certainly consult you with cooperatively. So if you're a business owner, boy, get a hold of one of us. You probably need some help. At least that's my experience with business owners. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining me on the Legacy and Faith Show today. If people are intrigued and want to get a hold of you, how do they find you?
Yeah, go on madronafinancial.com. Got lots of stuff. We even have a section just for 1031 exchanges and DSTs on there too. So that can be a good place for some resources.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. A lot of good information. And if you want to know more about what I do, head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, there's upcoming educational opportunities, ways to get a hold of me. So head over to legacyandfaith.com and thank you. Have a blessed day. Thank you so much for joining us on today's edition of the Legacy and Faith Show.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.